You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Time once again, MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition. And what a funny week, whether it's invoices for broken bats, really bumpy flights and teams getting diverted to strange cities, a surprise first place team, and all the Josh Hamilton perspective you can shake a stick at. You're going to find it here on the AL West edition of MLB.com Extras. Boy, Brian, last week when we were wrapping up the podcast, we were talking about this long road trip the Astros are going to be heading on and to some places that they haven't, you know, at least in recent years, had a lot of success, specifically Oakland. And as it turns out, no matter how this road trip would end for the Astros, they have to be absolutely over the moon with the way things have gone.
Oh, well, no doubt. I think we were talking about the road trip last week, and we said that, you know, maybe you take four wins, maybe five, go 5-4, and here they are. They won six of the first seven, including a sweep in Oakland, which is a place where they never play well. It's their first ever sweep of the A's. So, you know, they have a chance to have a really, really terrific road trip. And, you know, even if they don't polish off the series in Seattle, I think they still have to feel really good about the way things went. But going to Oakland in the middle of the series, and I think it's just given them fits since they joined the American League, and sweeping that series and doing it with a couple of games where they came back, they had to rally late. The same thing we saw Monday night in San Diego. You know, those are games I don't think they win in the previous couple of years, because it seemed like if they had a lead and they blew it, then they kind of folded the tent a little bit. Now they have a lead and they blow it. It just seems like they keep charging. They come back, and somebody new comes up with a big hit, and they come out of there with a win. So it's been very impressive so far.
Yeah, they've done a lot of things really well. I guess the one downside right now has to be the news surrounding Jed Lowry. And he's headed into Houston. He's going to have an MRI on this thumb. But you got a chance to see him after the ball game on Monday night, right? What did you get?
Yeah, you could tell he was really, really frustrated. The thumb was swollen, and I didn't get good vibes off, you know, the way he was acting. I think that we could be headed into a DL situation. Of course, you know, no one said that for sure, but the fact that he's going to have an MRI, if he's going to be out for any extended period of time, they're going to have to make a roster move, because, you know, they could put Marwin Gonzalez to back up at short, but then they really don't have any other middle infielders, so they can't leave themselves exposed here without another middle infielder. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if Lowry goes on the DL. And that's a shame, because he's been hitting the ball so well right now. I mean, on the road trip, he's hitting .476, and he's got an on-base percentage of .621. So, you know, he's one of their big reasons that they won six of the first seven games on this road trip. And to be without him just punches a huge hole in your lineup at this point.
Yeah, what about his position on this team? You know, obviously, you talk about the shortstop position and the lack of depth maybe they had there at the moment. But what about just overall his presence in the clubhouse, his demeanor, his, you know, just the way he interfaces with the rest of his teammates? You know, he was there a couple of years ago, seemed like he was an impactful guy. Back again, how big a role does he play with his team that way?
Well, I think he plays a huge role. I mean, he's number one. He's been on some playoff teams in the past with Oakland and Boston. So he's one of the few guys in that clubhouse that has been in pennant races, that has dealt with success before, has been in the playoffs. And, you know, that's going to come, you know, invaluable as the season gets longer. And if the Astros stay in contention, stay in first place, and having a guy like Lowry in the clubhouse is going to help. And also, just with the way he swings the bat, being a switch hitter, he's got a little bit of power, can draw some walks. They really can hit him anywhere in the lineup, and we've seen that. We've seen him up top. We've seen him down towards the middle, and he was hitting fourth on Monday night, hit a home run before he got injured on the slide. So he's just, you hear this term, like professional hitter, and that's what he is. You can put him anywhere in the lineup. He's going to go out there and give you all that he's got. Of course, the challenge with Lowry has been keeping him on the field for his career, so now he's facing another thumb injury, so we'll see what happens.
That's a good point. He has certainly had a history of this sort of stuff. I think he's the only position player over the age of 29 on this team, too. I mean, making him the salty veteran, I guess, of the crew.
Yep.
But how, how in the world are they doing this, Brian? I mean, I believe they've got like five everyday players below the Mendoza line. And I get that batting average is not the ultimate indicator anymore. I mean, no one really cares anymore about batting average. But still, that does seem somewhat remarkable. How are they pulling this off?
Well, it's that old secret formula, pitching and defense. And it's amazing how often it comes back to that. But, their starters have done a really, really nice job. Their bullpen is one of the best in the American League. I think they were fourth in the ERA heading into Monday, which I thought they were even higher than that. But that's basically how they're getting it done. And defensively, in the first seven games of this road trip, I think they've committed one error. I mean, they've really done a nice job catching the ball, throwing it, not trying to do too much. If you look at Monday night's game in San Diego, for example, two guys that really struggle with the bat, Chris Carter, Colby Rasmus, they go 0-for-6 with six strikeouts combined in their first three at-bats. And then the eighth inning, they both come through with clutch hits. So even though guys are struggling, you still have some guys in the lineup that are very dangerous. George Springer hitting below 200, but he comes through with three stolen bases and scores the go-ahead run. So up and down the lineup, you know, Jason Castro is another guy struggling, hits a homer last night. Even though these guys are struggling, at bat to at bat, they still have a chance to have a big impact on the lineup, and we saw that on Monday night.
You know what, though, Brian, and I get it. You know, pitching and defense, and there's no debating that. But as I look at the road trip, and you're talking about, you know, Seattle, you know, typically not a real hitter-friendly ballpark. Oakland certainly is not hitter-friendly. San Diego has long had the reputation of being a pitcher's ballpark, and you know, here's a team that on this road trip has scored fewer than five runs in a game only once. That was at Seattle. They have scored seven or more runs in a game on this road trip, four times. So they're scoring runs, too, somehow.
Yeah, they are. And they scored nine runs Monday. I think they scored nine on Saturday. And the thing about the runs that they're scoring is it seems like so many of them are late. They're scoring a lot of late runs when the game's tied or they fall behind a little bit. They come charging the eighth or ninth inning. One of the games in the game Dallas Keuchel started in San Diego, it's a 0-0 game, and they fall behind 2-0 in the 10th, and they answer and score, and then they score three more in the 11th. And it's just they're getting some clutch hits late in game. Talking to AJ Hinch last night, he says it's an offense where sometimes you have to wait. And that goes back to the Rasmus and Carter struggling their first six at-bats yesterday, that you have to wait for sometimes for the right moment to see who's going to step up, whether it's a Lowry or Rasmus and Carter. And they're hitting some home runs, striking out a lot. We saw that Monday night, 13 strikeouts. They also hit three home runs. That's going to be a formula we're going to see a lot from this team.
Is it too early for fans to start dreaming of bigger and better things for the end of the season? Is this just a real fun start? How real is what we're seeing?
I think with every series they win, the deeper we get, and we're almost to the end of April, I think it becomes more real. And I think in a month, if they're sitting where they're sitting now, then I think the fans can really, I think, start getting behind them. But if I'm a fan, I'm getting behind them now. I mean, why not? I mean, Astros fans have had it tough here for a few years. The Astros are, they got to five games over 500. This is the first time since the end of the 08 season. So you're talking about seven seasons of fans not being able to watch just consistent winning baseball. So, hey, if I'm a fan, I'm going nuts. I'm behind this team. You know, I'm saying, hey, we're in first place. Let's keep it going.
So what about inside the clubhouse? Is there, is there an attitude, a chip on the shoulder kind of thing going with this group? Rodney Dangerfield, they don't get any respect. Are they just, is it a more professional setting? How would you characterize what you see in the clubhouse? Because it is a fairly young clubhouse, it seems.
Yeah, it's a very even-keeled, very professional clubhouse, and I think that starts with the manager. He comes to work every day, A.J. Hinch, and he's the same guy. And they've added a lot of veterans in the offseason. You know, we talked about Larry, but even guys in the bullpen, Gregerson and Misha, guys who've been in some pennant races and playoffs, they added some of these guys, and they bring another level of that stability. You have young guys like Altuve and Castro who've done nothing, get their brains beat in for years, and they're so eager to win. But then you got the veterans that are like, hey, let's just take it one game at a time. It's a cliche, but I think AJ Hinch has done a great job of keeping this team very, very narrow focused on what's immediately ahead of them. And I don't think they have us against the world. I don't think we're out to prove people wrong. I think we can win this game tonight. And hey, at 12-7, I think it's working for them pretty well.
Yeah, no question. I almost wonder, though, if they want to come home or if they just want to stay out on the road where, as you mentioned, 6-1 so far on this long road trip with two remaining in San Diego. Brian McTaggart, always great stuff. I see you staying up really late posting articles to the website and getting up really early to do these podcasts. You might well be the hardest working man in baseball.
When I say I'm going to do a job, Dave, I do a job. That's just the way it goes.
Darn tootin'. Alden, look, it has been a long, bizarre journey for this Angels franchise and for their fans, but it looks like the relationship with Josh Hamilton is at long last, complete, I guess we could say, as he moves on to the Rangers. What about this deal stands out to you?
You know what? I think what stands out to me is that, and a lot of people may not agree with this, but it's that this was probably the best possible scenario given the circumstances. The relationship between Josh and the Angels, as we had talked about before, become pretty awkward, pretty contentious, and this is only going to get uglier as the days went on, as Josh Hamilton got healthy, as the possibility that Angels and Artie Moreno tried to exercise some provisions in his contract that he felt gave him recourse for a relapse. The Major League Baseball Players Association could have gotten involved again. Who knows how this could have turned out? I think in the end, the fact that Josh is going back to the team that he wanted to go back to and that the Angels are saving some money because of it was probably the best solution here. I think it had become inevitable for a while that Josh Hamilton just simply was not going to play for the Angels anymore. Angels owner Artie Moreno didn't want him to play for the team anymore. It's really that simple. And I think by the end of it, Josh Hamilton didn't want to play there anymore either. He wanted to go back to Texas. I'm told that the Angels explored multiple trades with multiple teams for the last 3 months. But everything that they explored eventually would have gotten him back to Texas. So it was either a one-for-one deal with Texas or going through another team that would eventually flip him to the Rangers. Everything they explored meant him going back to Texas because that was probably the only team that was willing to take him on, and that was the only team that Josh Hamilton really wanted to play for. And look, outside of just baseball, and Josh Hamilton spoke about this in his press conference, you know, he's got four daughters who live in Texas. He's going through a divorce right now. There's a whole bunch of issues that are going on with his personal life right now. Playing in Southern California probably wasn't going to do him any good. He needed to be back home. He needed to be in Texas. And, you know, as we touched on throughout with this topic here, this was more than just a baseball issue with Josh, because if this was only a baseball issue, you know, you do what you typically do with rehabbing players, even if you want to dump them. You take them through a rehab assignment. You showcase them to other teams. Try to build a market for him. This was completely different with Josh. They wanted to work something out. They had been trying to work something out for a while now. The fact that the Rangers were able to kick in some money, it's not much. It's only about $67 million for the next 3 years. But in addition to that, the fact that Josh Hamilton was willing to restructure his deal, which is made up for by the fact that he's going to a place with no state income tax, that became a benefit to the Angels that ultimately just got this deal done. And again, I feel like it was good for both sides that they just had a clean break and this did not continue on any further, because this thing had been going on since early February when Josh Hamilton had his relapse.
Yeah, and it's just, like you say, it's just one of those situations you just don't, it's hard to feel good about any of it until you come up with a solution that apparently works. But how much money do the Angels ultimately look to save with this deal?
That's still a little fuzzy right now. They can't really comment on it. This was, part of the agreement was that this could not be commented on, but I'm told that the Rangers are kicking in $6 to $7 million, and it looks like Hamilton restructuring his deal. He's kicking in about $10 to $12 million. He's taking $10 to $12 million less, which, as I pointed out before, it's he's still making more because of no state income tax. I mean, living in California, I could tell you that that California takes a lot of your money on state income tax. But I think the big benefit for the Angels is what they say below the luxury tax threshold. The luxury tax threshold has pretty much acted as the Angels' spending limit the last couple of years. They entered the year about $12 million below that threshold, which sits at $189 million. I'm told that after this deal, they got significantly more room under it, somewhere between $16 million and $19 million. And that's money that they're going to use to upgrade the roster. Now, how they do it remains to be seen. There's still a lot of season to play out, and there's still a lot of time for them to see what holes they truly have. But I expect them to use that money. I expect them to eventually get some help offensively. So it is a benefit to them. Ugly as this might have been, this was not an amicable breakup by any means. It was an awkward scenario, but at the very least, the Angels have some money under the cap, and I do expect them to use it.
Yeah, okay. Well, like you say, all's well that ends well. The team's played a little better lately, winning four of their last six. Do you sense that there's any impact, any relief in the clubhouse to have this issue behind them, or would we all be sort of extrapolating too much to say that?
I mean, I think in a way, I think the players were tired of talking about it because they really didn't know what to say. I mean, you know, on one side, they want to support a teammate, which Josh Hamilton was a teammate, so just yesterday. But they also didn't want to seem like they were at odds with the front office because they felt like if they sided with Josh Hamilton, then are we in trouble because the Angels brass is not really taking his side? They didn't really know what to say. I think there was a group of players in that clubhouse that truly wanted Josh Hamilton back, were upset by how the situation was handled and felt that Josh could have helped him this year. But I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that was the majority. I think the majority of the players in that clubhouse, and this is not an indictment on Josh or how they feel about them, I just think they were indifferent about the situation. These are guys that they're professionals. They understand that it's a business, and they've seen how much turnover goes on in major league clubhouses. They're focused on doing their job. And I think a lot of them, even though they won't say it publicly, I think a lot of them are kind of glad that this is just over. They have some closure, and they can just move on with the season.
Yeah, well, on a related but unrelated note, Angels have played well against the Texas Rangers. Took 2 of 3 in Arlington around the middle of the month. Just took 2 of 3 at home from the Rangers. And on a lighter note, one of the real fun moments of the week was the Garrett Richards, Adrian Beltre exchange after Richards broke 3 of his bats. I love that. I thought that was pretty fun, and obviously I guess Garrett got a kick out of it too.
Yeah, that's really cool. And Adrian Beltre is one of the best. He's one of the great personalities in the game. I mean, you could tell when you watch him on the field, he's having fun. There's nothing I enjoy more than watching him bicker with Elvis Andrews every time there's a pop fly to the infield. And Garrett Richards is going to break a lot of bats. I mean, that's a 98-mile-an-hour fastball with a lot of movement. He breaks a lot of bats. If everybody built Garrett Richards for the bats that he breaks, I don't think he'd make any money this year.
yeah, no doubt. So as they kind of get things turned around a little bit, I mean, is there that sense? I mean, it's still hovering right around 500. But now, after an off day on Monday, to the road they go, Oakland, San Francisco. It's a long week in the Bay Area right there. Feel a little bit better, though, after that homestand?
Yeah, you know what? I think they have to feel fortunate that they still have their heads above water and they're around 500. With the whole Josh Hamilton mess going on, and with the fact that they haven't hit at all, I think they got to feel fortunate that they're 9-10 going on this road swing. They're going to hit eventually, but the offense just has not been there. They're 24th in the majors in OPS going into today. They got a handful of players that are still hitting below 200. Matt Joyce hasn't gotten going. Albert Pujols hasn't gotten going. Chris Ionetta has been struggling mightily in the batter's box. C.J. Crone got a few hits the other day. It looked like maybe he's turning the corner. We'll see, because he's been struggling a lot too. I got to think this is going to pick up eventually, but they got to feel pretty good about themselves being 9-10 given those struggles.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think they have survived a rough patch to this point, and now with some clarity ahead, we'll see what happens with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Alden Gonzalez, thanks so much, as always. We'll do it again next week.
As always, JNU and the A's back in town briefly, anyway, after a long three-city road trip. And here we are mid to late week. You're getting ready to head out on another three-city road trip, Texas, Minneapolis, and then Seattle. I mean, this is a grueling stretch for this Oakland team.
It really is, and also not only just, you know, them being on the road a lot, but you look at their off days. I mean, up to this point, they've only had one, and they were the last team to have an off day, and now they don't have another. You know, they go through this 10-game road trip, they come back, they play three against Boston, and only then do they get another off day. So it's a grueling stretch and not really a fun one, especially for you know, a bullpen that's kind of gone through some struggles, and you know, it's still without Sean Doolittle, so there's been a lot of delaying in the bullpen and even just the rotation, you know, too. So from that standpoint, it hasn't been good for them. And of course, you know, offensively, you know, a day off every now and then can only help. And they're really, I mean, it's been a grueling stretch, but you know, I think they're still trying to kind of find out who they are as a team this first month as we end it here today, and kind of form an identity.
Well, you bring up the most important point when it comes to scheduling, and that is just the health of a bullpen. Not even the health so much as it's just the durability, because there's a limit as to how many times you can get somebody up and not use them or put them in a game consecutive days, whatever the case may be. In certain franchises, I know, have differing philosophies on that, but there's no question that, you know, a day or two can be absolutely critical for a bullpen. And that has been, when you look at the season to this point for Oakland, would you say that is the weak spot?
It is. And I think it's a little bit of a surprise. I mean, this is a team that they knew, you know, since January that they were going to be without Sean Doolittle to start the season. But then when you saw someone of Tyler Clifford's caliber join the team, you're thinking, okay, well, you know, you got him able to close. You still have all your other guys. You have, you know, Dan Otero, Eric O'Flaherty, Fernando Abad, guys that did a lot for this bullpen last year. You're still thinking, this is a pretty decent bullpen, maybe one of the best in the league, you know, if not the division at least. And, I mean, as we all know, relievers are just so volatile, and you don't know what to expect year to year. And early on, unfortunately, what's been the case is the guys that did so well for them last year, like Otero and O'Flaherty, they've had some early season flips, and not just one, but multiple. I think it's seven losses the A's bullpen is responsible for. And, yeah, there really just hasn't been one standout reliever. They've already changed roles several times. You know, I know Bob Melvin's still trying to figure out his best late-inning bullpen mix. And with Ryan Cook back in the mix, hopefully that kind of lengthens out the bullpen. But, you know, even Cook had his trouble last night, you know, walked a batter and ends up scoring the go-ahead run. So, really, it's hard to rely on any one guy down there. I think Evan Scribner's been a nice surprise for them. But, I mean, this is a bullpen that has to be, you know, ironed out and quickly. And I think Doolittle's return within the next month should only help that.
Well, Jesse Chavez has thrown the ball well in the bullpen. And I understand as you get ready to wrap up the series on Thursday afternoon, he's been moved back into the rotation, and that may not be a function so much of how he's thrown the ball as much as it is the struggles, I guess we could call it, of Kendall Graveman, who has been sent back to AAA. What is the thought right now around Graveman and how he may fit in the rest of this year, how much time they feel or what they feel he needs to get straightened out at AAA?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy, obviously, coming out of spring, you know, there were so many expectations on him just because of the spring he had. He gave up one earned run in 25-plus innings. So, of course, you know, coming out of spring, he deserved that spot in the rotation. I think there was just the expectations were so high, and this is a kid that a year ago he was pitching at single A. I think a lot of people forget that. I mean, last year he went from single A to the big leagues. He jumped four levels in 1 year. You know, and it was really, you know, him just developing that sinker ball, and he didn't have that his first few starts at the A's. You know, he was up, his fastball didn't have much depth, and, you know, and I think the pressure kind of got to him. You know, he wasn't able to make those in-game adjustments necessary of a pitcher, and, you know, this is something he hasn't gone through before, you know, failure at the big leagues, and so I think they just want to put him in a different environment to work these things out. You know, clearly they think he's a tremendous pitcher. He obviously has great stuff, but it's just about kind of figuring it out and harnessing it all and in a place where there's not as much pressure as the big league. So they fully expect him to be back up at some point this year. Of course, I mean, Jesse Chavez is a really nice guy to have in your pocket. I mean, he was, Bob Melvin says all the time, he put up just as good of numbers as any of the A's all-stars last year in the rotation, and made a spot start a while ago in Anaheim and did really well. And, you know, this is a guy that could be any other team's, you know, number three, number four starter. So the fact they can plug a guy like him in, you know, just speaks to the depth they have. But they do believe in Graveman and do believe he'll be back at some point.
Yeah, depth in that rotation, and we've touched on that before, that if there's one thing the A's do well, it certainly is stockpiling starting pitchers. And to that end, what is the latest news then on the progress of guys like Jared Parker or A.J. Griffin?
Yeah, Jared's doing really well. He's making very quick progress. He's already made two minor league rehab starts, and his next one will actually be with AAA Nashville. So, I mean, we could see him, you know, by the end of May, if not sooner. And AJ, too, is making good progress. He's a little bit behind. His surgery was after Jared's last year, but he's still also expected to be available come June. So, and they do have, I think people forget how many guys the A's have on the disabled list. And between those guys and Doolittle and Coco Crisp and Ben Zobrist, but they're all making really good progress. So, you know, Jared, you know, that's a guy, I mean, it'll be like making, you know, a big trade and giving up nothing when they get him back. And he's looked really good early on. You know, he's sticking with three pitches, you know, ditching the slider for now. And I mean, his velocity has been really impressive. He struck out seven on Tuesday in a minor league game, and you know, they're really encouraged with what they're seeing from him.
Now, you mentioned Ben Zobrist in that answer, which I have full disclosure. He's one of my favorites. I just love a guy who can play so many different positions as well as he plays them and hit as well as he can. I guess you guys got very good news on his knee procedure, and he may be coming back even as early as some point in May. How critical, how big of a piece is he for that lineup?
I mean, he's arguably the biggest piece. I mean, this is why they brought him in. You know, there's so few guys as versatile as he is. I mean, he's perhaps, you know, the league's most versatile player. And, you know, to be able to do what he does on both sides of the ball, you know, rotating different spots defensively and then turning around and hitting in the number three spot. I mean, he's a really significant, impactful player, and you know, it lengthens their lineup. They're having to juggle some guys around without him in there, and of course, defensively, I mean, they do see him at second base most days, but the fact that you can plug him in into the outfield on any given day, I mean, that's a real luxury, and he is that guy, and he's, I mean, clearly it's such an all-around player, but his work ethic, too, is really impressive, and I think that's what, you know, guys notice first about him, just his professionalism and work ethic. And, you know, when you watch him, it really doesn't surprise you all that he can do.
Well, at 9-13, Oakland not off to the start that they had wanted, but if they can get healthy, you know, maybe they can get this thing back on track soon. Long road trip up ahead. Jane, travel safely and get healthy yourself and, of course, everybody else.
Thank you.
Joined by Greg Johns, as always. Greg, it's the beginning of a long road trip for the Rangers, and it's coming off a long homestand. Well, they're a team of extremes, it seems. But it turns out this long road trip started with a misadventure of sorts for the charter flight, huh?
They had a few thunderstorms coming into Arlington, into Dallas. Indeed, had a pretty choppy flight that had to divert to San Antonio, and I don't know if it was a good wake-up call because it was about midnight, and they wound up getting into their hotel about 5 a.m. When they finally got into Dallas on the start of a 10-game road trip. That's not the way you want to start out when you're traveling all over, but they survived. Certainly, we had some stories to tell. Plane lurching as it landed and wings flopping this way and that way, and some pretty wide-eyed guys that got off that plane, and a few thanks to the big man upstairs for getting them down safe. We all travel a lot, and sometimes you get a bad flight, and sometimes you get one that's really scary, and they were glad to get out of there and be on the ground and terra firma and playing baseball. So all the good that ends well, as Lloyd McLennan said, if you can talk about a flight, afterwards, it was a good flight. So they're here and safe in Texas and ready to play some baseball.
Well said. You're right. If you can talk about it, all good. There's always that guy or two on the plane, right, who even on a good flight, it's a tough day for him. Do the Mariners have any guys who just like the travel?
Well, there's a few guys, everybody's telling stories, of course, when they made it. And Logan Morrison was saying that Kyle Seager was sweating through his shirt. He could see. I asked Taiwan Walker after they won their first game here in Texas, which was better, the flight, which is more exciting for him, the flight or winning the game. And he said, I don't want to talk about the flight. That was the scariest thing I've ever seen. So, then there was other guys saying, hey, it was all fun and it was just exciting. And so, everybody takes it differently. When you fly as much as the Mariners, you better darn well get used to it because nobody in baseball travels more than the Mariners. So they certainly have their share of air miles. And as I said, they're ready and good to go here.
Yeah, it's funny because that's where I was going with it too. Mariners and their travel, it is just so rough in general. I mean, the Padres can, they can claim maybe a similar hardship, but nobody quite like the Mariners. So not cool the way that one started, but a win in Arlington for this team. And, it hasn't been a great start for the Mariners, 8-11. But do they feel, okay about where they are with the record? Like maybe they've gotten away with something, because the pitching outside of King Felix just frankly has not been very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the real sense I'm getting, Dave, is that they feel like, of course, the record's not where they want it, but they feel like everything's there. They just got to put it together. I mean, they've seen the pieces. They just kind of had problems at the wrong time, whether it's pitching, the offense doesn't come through and the pitching's good, vice versa, in the next game, and defense lets down here and there. They keep saying, hey, we like what we got. We like the pieces. We just got to start playing better baseball, and certainly there's plenty of time for that, but you don't want to let time waste either. You missed the playoffs by a game last year, and these games can catch up with you down the road. But big picture, certainly they still feel like this is a team that's made for this, and they're ready to roll. But you're right, the pitching has not been good, but starting to see signs. Certainly a couple good starts from Taiwan Walker certainly has people breathing a little easier. Jay Happ has been very good. So Felix and Happ have been the two starters that have been good. Walker and Paxton struggled out of the gate, but Walker now pitching better, and they really need to get Paxton on that plan as well. And of course, Sashi Iwakuma getting hurt now, that's a factor they're going to have to deal with. He's out 2 to 4 weeks, and he had not been pitching well, so we'll see how he comes back. But now is when they kind of test the depth that they talked about all spring. They said they had six starters and really for five spots, and now they're going to prove that, I guess, with Reynis Elias coming up. It's pitched well in his first game up in Iwakuma's place. So starting pitching is where it begins and ends for a lot of teams when you're talking about success, and the Mariners certainly need to get there squared away. And they're starting to see some signs, but that certainly is a big part of where they want to go here.
Well, yeah, no question about that. And not to be a total armchair quarterback or amateur analysis here, but, you know, in Paxton's case, because, you know, it is unique with guys like Paxton and Walker, who are so highly thought of and have such great stuff. In Paxton's case, could it be just simply a function of throwing too many strikes? I mean, he just pounds his zone, doesn't walk many guys, but as a result, you know, you see the hit numbers are maybe a little higher than folks would like, and he gives up his fair share of home runs. Is he a guy who just needs maybe to learn how to live on the periphery of the zone a little bit more?
I would say no. I would disagree with you on that one. He's a guy I think his control's been a little off, actually. When he's sharp, he's pretty darn tough, and he hasn't had quite that same control, at least the first few games. He may not be walking guys. You know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but his command is certainly not, you know, down in the zone is where he wants to live. He's a big, tall guy, likes to come down, you know, from 6'7", with big, long arms, and that's where he wants to live down low. He's been getting up a little too much. Just hasn't been as sharp as he was last year. And he's a guy, that my impression of James is when he's on, he is really, really tough. I mean, he's top of the rotation tough, but when he's struggling, he struggles. And it doesn't seem to be a lot of gray area in between. He kind of needs to iron that out a little bit. In days he's not pitching well and survive, they can't afford, you know, him coming out in 2 2/3 and getting knocked around. That's where they've struggled early this year is, you know, their starters just aren't getting deep in enough games. It's put a lot of pressure on the bullpen, and that's a tough formula. So I have no doubt he'll get squared away. He's a very talented young man, and we've seen Walker kind of right his ship and get going. I would think Paxton will as well. We tend to forget he's 26 years old, but he just doesn't. You know, he was late coming out of college. Had to sit out a year, played independent ball. You know, he's 26, but doesn't have a ton of major league experience. And the experience he had was awfully good, awfully quick. He hasn't gone through a lot of rough stuff, so this is kind of his time. And as McLennan likes to say, there's not a player in baseball that doesn't have a rough stretch, and you know, that's where you find out where you are and learn from. And he's kind of going through that stretch right now, but he's a pretty darn talented young guy, and I expect he'll be fine in the long run here.
He certainly is young, though he would look a little long in the tooth next to Taijuan Walker, who's just 22 years old and mm-hmm. had a real nice outing on Monday. And just looking at your story, you know, he did it without what he considered a real good fastball, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it's funny. Afterwards, you know, Taijuan saying, hey, I just didn't have my good fastball. Why is that? Because, you know, he looked pretty effective. He said, well, my velocity was down a little bit. And it's funny, you know, went over and talked to Mike Zunino, and he just kind of laughed, shook his head, and he said, you know, I guess when you normally throw 96, 97, you think 94, 95 isn't good. He said, hey, I'll take that every day of the week as long as he's got the command and pitching down in the zone like he was. And I think that's where a kid like Taijuan and probably Paxton can make strides. When you learn, you don't have to throw the ball through the wall. What you do need to do is command it and locate it. And you know, you see the success Felix has, and they can learn from him. I mean, he doesn't throw as hard as he used to, but he knows what he's doing, and he stays down in the zone. He pitches in and out, and he's just has the tough off-speed stuff. You don't have to throw 99 to be successful, but you do have to have good command. And Walker had that Monday, and I think he can learn from that. You know, you can throw 93, 94, 95 and be pretty darn effective if you're locating down and pitching where you want. And if they can get more of that from Taijuan, but more of that from Paxton in the future, that's exactly what they're looking for.
As we wrap it up real quick, this road trip starts in Texas. What was the reception like for Nelson Cruz?
Fine. I mean, it's funny. Nelson said, and I asked him before the first game, I said, you came here last year with Baltimore. How did the fans react? He said, well, they're really nice. It was a very nice reception until I hit a home run. And he said that's when you know, they remember you're on the other team and you're a rival now. And it's hard to tell with Nelson. It sounded like booze, but some of it is Cruz. So I saw people cheering. I heard, you know, what sounded like kind of booze. He had an RBI single in the first, and you know, I think he's still well liked in Texas, but I think they have a hard time seeing him on the other team when he's leading the majors in home runs and RBIs. So certainly the Mariners glad to have him on their club. Nelson happy to hit in Texas and seems to be happy hitting anywhere right now. He's really been carrying the Mariners early with what he's done in his first couple weeks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And speaking of weeks, you've got a full one, 3 in Arlington, 4 in Houston. You guys are Lone Star heavy on this trip. And then it's off to Anaheim, a long trip. Greg Johns, we appreciate you taking a little time for us today.
You bet, Dave. Always good talking to you.
Talking Rangers, and look, the big news is that Josh Hamilton is now officially, after a lot of speculation, a Texas Ranger. Can you give us a sense of really how it all came to be?
Well, Dave, I think it's obvious that when Josh had his relapse in the offseason, the Angels weren't very happy. And I think at that point they started to look for ways to separate themselves from Josh. Now, he also did not perform very well the last 2 years. They weren't happy with that. So once the Angels started looking around, obviously the Rangers became a likely place, and the Rangers' offense obviously hasn't been as good as they had hoped. So when you put it all together and Josh's desire to return to Texas, it made for a pretty easy scenario once all the parties started agreeing on the principles that needed to be part of the trade, and they got it done.
Well, it seems like a deal, obviously, that's very, very favorable from the Rangers' standpoint, right? I mean, there's hardly any risk here at all, and I understand, you know, Hamilton, generally speaking, has been a risk in recent years for teams, but $6 million over 3 years, is that, do I understand that's it?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe. I think there's some other parts of the deal that give the Angels additional financial relief and made it palatable for them to do this deal. But yeah, the Rangers are getting Josh Hamilton very cheap, no matter how you look at it. And, you know, who knows what he still has left, but, you know, there's a good chance it could be something substantial. I don't know if he's going to be the American League MVP again or do all the things that he did during those 5 years with the Rangers. But, you know, if this is a guy that can hit 25 home runs, drive in 90 RBIs, you know, that's kind of what we said, people have been saying about Prince Fielder, too. You know, if he can get back to that level, you know, if that happens, then, you know, he's a great bargain. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that the price is right on this one.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. And you know, he's been through this at least on some level before, right? I mean, he's disappeared and come back and disappeared and come back. And it would not be a shocker to see him perform well. But there's got to be something to the prior relationship with the Rangers. Was there somebody internally who was really driving this on the Rangers side?
Well, I think John Daniels was driving it, no doubt about it. I mean, he was the general manager when Josh was here. He knows Josh better than anybody in the organization, really. You know, maybe the exception of Michael Young, a couple of the other players. You know, John Daniels, I think, wanted him back. John knows very well what he's capable of doing. And, again, it's just how close he can get to that level again. And, you know, the Rangers feel it's worth the risk.
Yeah, well, what's the reaction been in the clubhouse?
Oh, the players are thrilled. I mean, you know, you look at the core guys, Beltre, Colby Lewis, Elvis Andrews, Mitch Moreland. I mean, they played with the guy. They saw him. They saw him firsthand. They know what he can do. They saw him help the Rangers go to 2 World Series. You know, some of the other players, you know, Prince Fielder, you know, he's got to love another bat in the lineup to help him. I mean, the more offense around Prince Fielder, the better he's going to be. And a lot of the other players, well, you know, they're pretty young and probably shouldn't even have an opinion on this. I mean, you start with the core guys and they're on board with it, and that should be enough.
Hey, young guys aren't allowed to have opinions, right? I mean, this is baseball.
I agree. I mean, you're a young player. Like, let's say Rougned Odor. I mean, he's a great young kid, but, I mean, does he need to be worried about Josh Hamilton? No, he doesn't. Leonis Martin doesn't need to be worried about that. Robinson Chirinos, you know, Nick Martinez. These guys need to be focused on themselves and getting better as players. So, you know, what the Rangers do as a front office, that's not their concern.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess maybe the big question left then is what's the timeline or the expectations for his return?
Yeah, Dave, that's a big question. You're right. And, you know, on Tuesday, the day after the press conference, he's headed to Arizona. He's going to work out there. And, you know, the Rangers got to put their eyes on him. You know, they got to see where his swing is, where his fielding is, where his conditioning is. And all the accounts have been that it's great, that he's been really working hard in Houston. But, you know, it's a big difference when you first lay eyes on him. So, you know, possibly 7 to 10 days in Arizona, maybe sooner if he looks better than expected. And then, you know, he's got a maximum of 20 days on a rehab assignment. I don't know if he needs all 20 days. You know, I would say, you know, 10 days at least. You know, he missed some time last year, did not play at all in spring training. He needs at-bats. You know, you can get at-bats in Arizona and extended spring training. You can stick a guy up there against, you know, all your young pitchers working out in surprise and get him all the at-bats he wants. But you still need, you know, I don't know, if you get 10 days, you get 40 at-bats in the minor leagues, and that's pretty much close to what a guy like Belcher and Fielder got in spring training.
Well, if there's a team in Major League Baseball that could use a little shot in the arm offensively, it might well be the Rangers. There's certainly, you know, a handful of other teams that are going through similar struggles, but it's somewhat, I guess, maybe more remarkable with this team just because of some of the individuals that are in this lineup. Where's Jeff Banister right now mentally on what he can do with this lineup to get something going? See, I mean, he's got to be getting frustrated.
Well, he's certainly tried every combination possible. You know, he's got Elvis batting six, which I'm not sure is where Elvis really needs to be batting. He was a number two guy when the Rangers went to the World Series. That always seemed to fit him well. But, you know, he's trying to find somebody in left field and get some something going for him. You know, Shin-Soo Chu has batted everywhere in the lineup. And, you know, with the way his batting average is going, the only place left is either the ninth spot or off the bench. But, you know, that's a huge thing right there, is they're not getting anything from Shin-Soo Chu. Belcher's off to a very slow start. I don't know how much that has to do with some of the offense around him. You know, Prince has done well. I think one of the guys, in all the bleak news about their offense, I think Mitch Moreland has looked very well. He's looked as good as I've seen him in a long time, driving the ball the other way, getting some big hits. I think he's done well. To me, that's the most encouraging thing. You know, left field has been a very frustrating area for the Rangers. You know, obviously they think Josh Hamilton will be there in, you know, like we said, 2 to 3, 4 weeks, whatever. When you look at this lineup, you know, they're a little disappointed that Rougned Odor is off to a slow start. They thought he'd be a little better than this. But, I mean, right now the biggest thing that's hurting this offense right now is Shin-Soo Chu just looks totally lost at the plate.
Yeah, his numbers are stunning, how bad they are to this point. Well, so maybe Hamilton can fix that situation. I will say this, maybe the best story of the week was the Adrian Beltre invoice to Garrett Richards. I really got a kick out of that. And, you know, sometimes you just need somebody to break it up a little bit, have a little fun. And certainly nobody does that better than Adrian Beltre, but even that didn't seem to turn things around for this crew.
Well, Beltre's a guy who's not going to get too down or too concerned or too worried about how he's doing. You know, he's going to always play the game hard, play the game right. You know, he's always been a slow starter in the past. He's had great second halves. But the second half doesn't start for another 2 months. They need him to have a great 5-6 of the rest of the way. I mean, he really needs to get going and, you know, maybe fill out a few less invoices and, you know, drive a few more balls into the outfield.
All right. Well, fair enough. On a real up note for this team, though, you know, Gallardo's doing what Gallardo does, and I think his numbers will certainly be there, you know, when this is all said and done. Nick Martinez, though, man, it's got to be thrilled with the way he's throwing the ball.
Yeah, he's throwing fastballs 89, 90, 91 miles an hour, and he's got great secondary stuff. He commands his fastball. I mean, what Nick Martinez is showing is that you don't need to have 95, 96 mile an hour stuff. You know, Colby Lewis was always the same way. You know, they need guys to command the fastball on the corners, you know, get their breaking balls over for strikes. give them 6-7 innings and go from there. You know, they also need to get this bullpen straightened out. I mean, they've got a lot of moving parts out there. You know, they got a rookie, Keona Kalo, trying to fill a seventh inning role. It's going to be very tough for him. Sean Tolleson's looked great. Neftali Feliz has looked fine. You know, they got guys like Ramon Mendez, you know, Anthony Bass. Guys are trying to, you know, find the right spot for him in the bullpen order. You know, the bullpen's going to be a big key for this team here in the next month. They really got to find the right combination for that group.
Well, we'll see what lies ahead on the horizon as they continue to tread water in Arlington. Back home, though, T.R. Sullivan, thanks for the inside information this week. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, David. See you later.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition, MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition.